It's time now for Optimal Health with Dr. Christopher Calipe. Dr. Calipe is an osteopathic physician, board certified in family practice and chelation therapy, anti-aging medicine. Dr. Calipe specializes in reconstructive and neurotherapy for chronic pain and musculoskeletal disorders. And he's achieved fellowship certification for stem cell therapy. Dr. Calipe's office number in Long Island is 516-794-0404. We will repeat that number throughout the show. Now, here's Dr. Christopher Calipe.
Welcome, friends, and thank you for tuning in to the Optimal Health Program today. Hope you're all doing well. As you know, we're going to chat here, take your calls at 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. And we'll chat about a variety of things. We've got some great research to look at. We're going to talk a little about the digestive process. We'll talk a little about food allergy statistics. There's always something interesting to read up on that gives us a little bit of an insight as to why people have so many problems with the foods they're eating. Years ago, it didn't seem to be that many people had indigestion, bloating, cramping, stomach issues, you know, changes in bowel movement or bowel function. But now, three quarters, probably closer to 80% of people that I see have some sort of stomach issue. And they also describe they didn't have it before, but lately this has developed over time. That could be because there are more chemicals than things in foods. That could be because they're allergic or have developed an allergy to either the food itself or the chemical. There are people that I talk to all the time that when they go overseas to eat a variety of foods there, they can have the grain and the bread, but not here, because they react to it here. Statistics for food allergy, and I think these are low estimates, and they talk about more than 170 different foods have been reported to have allergic reactions in the U.S. 170 foods. Of course, the most common that doctors would see if they look for it via blood, which is a very superficial screening, or skin test, as I recommend intradermal, milk, egg, peanut, various types of nuts, wheat, soy, fish, shellfish, chocolate. But there are people that are allergic to a wide range of different things. And when we evaluate what they're allergic to, take those things out of their diet, a variety of different things improve, because allergy is propagated through your blood. 70% of your immune system is in your gut. And recognition of things that are coming in can trigger antibody reaction. A variety of different substances will go to act and create the symptoms you have. And they can go range from anything from headache to rash, swelling of your lips, irregular heartbeat, bowel changes, diarrhea. The list is very long. They say that at least 15 million people in the United States have food allergies. I think that that's a low number. They say that 4% of people age 18 or older have food allergies. 38,000 children, and the surveys there indicate that 5.9 million children have food allergies. So, and they're also talking about the number of people going to the hospital to be treated for food allergy is extremely high, well up into the thousands. So I think we have to take the foods that we eat more seriously. Everybody typically will say, well, I have this for breakfast, this for lunch, and this for dinner. And then when they start to have problems or symptoms, they don't correlate that with the food, because it can take a time before that food creates the symptom. It can take up to a week for a food to build the antibodies up to a high enough level to create a problem. Each year in the U.S., 200,000 people require emergency medical care for allergic reactions to food. 200,000 people. And again, I think some of this is shy of what we typically see, because a decent percentage of patients, maybe the majority of my patients, have some sort of allergy reactions to foods, trees, grasses, weeds, molds, chemicals, etc. So we have to take this into consideration. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222, and we can get you up on the air. Let's go look at some of the research. Higher calcium intake and higher vitamin D levels are linked to greater weight loss in people that try to follow diets. So this is a study involving an analysis of data collected from a two-year trial involving subjects' average age of 52 years. They were looking at vitamin, mineral levels, hormone levels. Those that seemed to have higher calcium intake and higher serum vitamin D had better weight loss as they followed their diet plan. Interesting, because we know that calcium is important for a wide range of things in your body. So is vitamin D. We know that vitamin D is beneficial for people that have osteoporosis. It's beneficial for your immune system to enhance its ability to ward off disorders. There's great research on vitamin D decreasing the risk of cancer. So both nutrients need to be in a good range in your body. That's why we check your blood for vitamins and minerals, certainly within your first visit, and then a few times throughout the year to make sure that what you're eating and the vitamins you're taking are in perfect range. Supplementation with curcumin may help to improve insulin levels. This is a double-blind, placebo-controlled study using curcumin. Curcumin longa can have a beneficial effect on insulin levels. This is a crossover design study. People had either a placebo or supplementation with the curcumin. They were looking for blood sugars 15, 30, 45, 60, 90, 120 minutes after testing, and they saw far better sugar control, far better insulin activity. Now, curcumin, as we know it, has good anti-inflammatory effect as well. It also has been documented to be a significant natural anti-cancer supplement, and that's been in literature for a long time. So there are some wonderful studies out there, and as I try to gather and put some of these on the website for people to see, we try to educate people as much as possible about the benefit of nutrients. And again, the key theme is that we have to learn about your body to know what you need to take to correct your deficiencies. If you're taking vitamins and you never blood test, your levels might stay low and you're not getting the benefit you think you're getting. So that's why the blood test is the most important thing. Once again, phone lines are open, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. And we can get you up on the air. Let's see what else we have to take a look at. Long-term supplementation with folic acid, B6, and B12 may lower the risk of depression in patients that survive stroke. Now, of course, these nutrients are important for a variety of things. They lower homocysteine. And people can have a stroke because the high homocysteine and low vitamins may allow for more plaque to build up in their blood vessels. And there are people who have low vitamins that have depression and anxiety as well. There are people that have depression and anxiety from low blood sugar because they eat too much carbohydrate and release a lot of insulin. There are people that have depression that have low thyroid, DHEA, testosterone hormone. So although this is just a great comment in one, you know, journal, we have to look at all the contributors to depression, anxiety, irritability, etc. This is from the Annals of Neurology, great peer-reviewed journal. Randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study. Results indicate that people that had the highest levels of B vitamins had the greatest reduction in depressive episodes. Now, of course, as one would expect, if a person has a stroke or any, you know, persistent medical problem, they're going to have anxiety or they're going to have depression. They're going to be sad as a result of dealing with something they didn't have to deal with before. But correcting nutrients always makes sense, because we require these nutrients for normal function. As I tell people, vitamins and minerals are food for your cells. They allow your cells to work well. When we deplete the vitamins, like taking a cholesterol medication, you wipe out CoQ10, you have side effects. You can have pain in your muscles. You can have changes in the contractility of your heart. So we know what vitamin deficiency does. There's hundreds of thousands of studies over many years, even in traditional medical research, about vitamin deficiency and what happens with it. And there are equally as many, maybe more, about the benefits that vitamins can create. So realistically, once again, we keep going back to understanding the reality of your body's, you know, requirements for vitamins and minerals. So there are people who need more vitamins than others based upon their physical activity or based upon their digestive absorptive ability. That's why we can't just throw vitamins at people and say, okay, let's see what happens. So we need to get a better handle on what your body requires, you know, based upon your individual function. Okay, phone lines are open, 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Ann in Great Neck. Hi there, how are you?
Hi, well, thank you,
I appreciate that, thank you, you're very nice, very kind.
Thank you. My brother had gone to the doctor, and they found that he has a lot of protein in the urine.
Okay.
Been a diabetic. He's been off of medication and everything for almost 2 years. He's regulated.
How long has he been diabetic?
I would say he had a bout of it when he was a child also, but I would say as an adult, probably 10 years.
Well, yeah, the diabetes can damage your kidneys, just like diabetes, and this is just a very well-documented, general comment. Diabetes can damage any blood vessel or nerve or organ in your body, and that's, been evidenced forever about, with diabetic research. So the diabetes has probably created some damage in the kidneys.
Okay. So I wanted to know, he's in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty well considered to come to New York and to see you. My sister did too. So
wonderful!
I know the wonders that you do.
So we know your family then. Okay.
yes, thank you. And he's also had a hip replacement, which mm-hmm. healed fine. His knee, he had a replacement, and he had a terrible recoup. But I told him before that he should come, before he did that. But now the other knee, he's definitely going to consider,
Okay. Well, if you want to talk about diabetes for a moment, because everybody listening really needs to understand. I think of diabetes, and if we talk about why does someone become diabetic? First of all, people in the past generation or two or three have been eating way too much carbohydrate early on as kids. Kids are given treats if they're good, they'll get candy and this and that. So our idea about having so much candy and sugar and carbohydrate in the diet has been bad all along. They vilified eggs for so many years and they never needed to. Eggs are great for you. But all this carbohydrate makes your pancreas produce so much insulin early on that it can't keep producing that insulin. It's like a car that's just sooner or later going to run out of steam or gas, Or if you wear shoes for 5 years in a row, you're not going to have any heels in your shoes. They'll have holes in them. So your pancreas gets tired, so it can't make the insulin. Now, even in people who don't have tons of carbs, they may be exposed to heavy metals, lead, mercury, nickel, cadmium, aluminum, arsenic. There's a ton of research on heavy metals throughout traditional medical journals and research, and they can get to your pancreas and damage your pancreas, just like they could damage your thyroid or your brain and contribute to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. They can cause autoimmune disease. So you can cause wear and tear in your pancreas from eating too much carbohydrate. Outside things can come in and damage your pancreas. Medications can create damage. Infection can cause damage. So those are the things that are within the realm of why people become diabetic. Is there some genetic component? I don't really believe it, because we can take people that are diabetic and change that. I can't change the color of your eyes, how much you look like your mom or your dad. So we can change the diabetic mechanism. So there are two distinct different areas I talk about. One is the central problem and the peripheral problem. Peripheral problem, meaning that people are eating too much carbohydrate. If you start to cut the carbohydrates down, your blood sugar can start to come down. If you're not doing any exercise, if you walk every day, your body will burn sugar and fat better. That also is nice for people who are overweight, because it brings down cholesterol, triglycerides. As your weight comes down, your blood pressure can come down. We correct hormone decline, because as you get older, your thyroid, DHEA, testosterone, etc., will drop down, and that makes it hard to burn sugars or burn fat and bring the weight down. And correcting vitamins. So that's the periphery, but the core central issue at the pancreas is that the pancreas is not making the insulin, and that's why we talk about using stem cell therapy to enhance the pancreas' ability to function. And there's ample research on that, a lot of which I have on my website. On the bottom of the website, there are 2,000 articles, which the last bunch of articles over a few years talks about stem cell therapy enhancing function in different parts of your body. But between those two things, the central and the peripheral, you get some pretty dramatic benefit. So we would want to look at someone and say, hey, okay, so you're diabetic for this amount of time. Let's check your nerves and see if you have neuropathy. Let's check your blood vessels and see if you have blockage. Let's look at your organs. Are they being affected? So the sooner the diabetic or the pre-diabetic comes in, the much more easily and rapidly we can change the environment.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to, I really want him to come in to see you.
Sure, we'd love to help him out.
Okay. But his kidney, the protein, the doctor said it was absolutely bad to have any protein in your...
Well, yeah, it's sort of like the gates of the kidneys, which are allowing, which should allow open gates to let the water and waste products of metabolism out of your body, are not, you know, holding the proteins in. So there's damage at the part of the membrane that's supposed to hold in the proteins but let out the waste products. So it's much more complicated than that, of course, but that's, you know, an easy explanation of what's occurring. You know, diabetic nephropathy is diabetes damaging the kidneys. Diabetic retinopathy is diabetes damaging the retina. So,
okay.
Yeah, we want to understand the entire picture. That's exactly what makes the most sense.
Okay. I thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for your call. Good talking to you again. Have a wonderful day. Phone lines are open. 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-9222. One or two of the more difficult things that I find myself talking about with people all the time, of course, is taking away foods that they love to eat, because people psychologically love to eat, you know, comfort foods, bread, pasta, oatmeal, things that they were brought up on, and they think that because they were brought up on them that they're still good, and for a lot of people, they're not. Every day I talk to people about the low-carb diet. Every day I'm discussing the same ideas and parameters of excess sugar causing damage. So we try to do things in a way where people can understand why they should change their diet. And as they do it, watch to see the benefit, allow that to be reinforcing to keep people doing it. We give them ideas as to how to change the food for people who love pasta. And I don't know anybody who doesn't love pasta. We tell them to switch out the pasta for a zucchini, put it through that little shredder device so you can have zucchini pasta. You can still flavor it with the tomatoes and the garlic and, you know, whatever else, basil, whatever you like to put in it. It's lighter. It doesn't cause you to have the bloating that the pasta does. It's really, you know, zucchini's got no sugar. So it's worlds better than having repeated exposures of pasta. And, of course, I've been saying a lot about cauliflower lately, because cauliflower, you can whip it up into what looks like mashed potatoes and you can flavor it and season it any way you like. And, of course, you can either buy or make riced cauliflower where it looks like rice, tastes like rice, but it's not rice, and it doesn't have the sugar. And then you could also season that and prepare it whichever way you like. A lot of the better stores now are carrying the cauliflower that's made into a crust, like a pizza crust. So it's really, instead of having the grain for the pizza crust, it's cauliflower with cheese and egg. And you could make it yourself. There are great recipe books out there now that give you so many different options. You know, it boggles the mind. Hundreds and hundreds of recipes. For years, I've been talking about the Low Carb Bible, which is an amazing, simple to read, easy to understand book of recipes, 150 recipes. And that book has been out for so many years, I don't even know how long it's been out. But I think it went out of print a few years ago, so now people that want to get it can pick it up for a dollar online. But just walking through Barnes & Noble in one of the bookstores and even looking online for low-carb books, there are hundreds of them. And some books have 500 low-carb recipes. So there are a lot of great things to eat that are not very high sugar-containing foods. So with that as well, for some of our patients that are somewhat local to the office, I put together a menu for a local catering facility so that our patients could, after they do the blood work, correct their vitamins, minerals, hormones, do the exercise, and then they can have food delivered that is low-carb and tasty and good for you. So that sort of completes the cycle or circle of how we want to be able to maximize and optimize your nutritional realm. Once, you know, we have this moving, you know, perfectly along with the catering facility, then we might put the menu on the website. Of course, we can't overwhelm the facility and have thousands and thousands of people order the food, but I want to work towards that so that, you know, people can eat and order and have delivered great food that's within that low-carb realm. So as I say, there's so many different things that you can eat, spaghetti squash, all sorts of squash, great foods that are low-carb, because the overwhelming majority of patients that I see have way too much carb in their diet, and that's what's causing their problems. Once again, phone lines are open, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you can do so right now. 1-800-848-WABC. Back to the research. Plasma selenium may be associated with improved cognitive function in elderly subjects. Well, we can pretty much say this about every vitamin, because there have been studies on all the B vitamins, of course, conversion of B12 into methyl B12, glutathione, vitamin C, vitamin D. This is yet another great study about selenium and how it can help with brain function. So this is a study involving over 1,000 participants aged 65 or more, and this is a big population-based cohort study. They're saying that selenium levels may be inversely associated with performance in neurological tests. So that's another reason why we test for vitamins. You want to make sure your levels are in great range. Selenium may also have some anti-cancer activity. So again, another reason it makes sense to test your vitamins and minerals and your digestive ability. Once again, phone lines are open if you'd like to call in. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Vitamin D deficiency. Every time I get on the computer, someone somewhere in the world is doing research on vitamin D. I can tell you that over the past probably 20 years that I've been doing, research and looking and learning on the computer, and of course being in practice for longer, for 30 years, and being on the radio and getting on and looking at articles, there have been vitamin D articles every time I get on the computer. So there's no shortage of vitamin D articles. And at one point, I went online and I looked to see how many articles there were, and the number is staggering. You know, many hundreds of thousands. This talks about vitamin D deficiency decreasing mortality risk in the older population. So they're talking about the vitamin D3. This is published in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It's a population-based study, men and women, 53 to 73 years of age, who are free of heart disease and cancer at baseline when they started. So vitamin D deficiency showed increased risk of mortality. And when I talk about vitamin D and having it decrease the risk of cancers, there's a big study in Italy that started spread out all over Europe. It was looking at vitamin D, and if your levels were close to 100, you're decreasing your risk of cancers by 77%. So important to make sure that your blood test is done to make sure your vitamins are in the right range. Okay, phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so now. Let's go to Paul in the Bronx. Hey, Paul, how are you?
Good afternoon, Doc. I'm blessed. If you have dialysis, Doc, how could you get rid of that?
Well, dialysis is used for people that have, extreme degeneration and damage of their kidneys. So I don't know how bad your kidneys are. I don't know what your creatinine or your GFR, glomerular filtration rate, are. I'd be hard-pressed to say that you can just take a magic pill and your kidneys would start working as if they were 20-year-old kidneys again. So we need to see what's damaging the kidneys. Do you have heavy metals on board, as many people do, that can cause damage to any organ? Do you know what your blood work shows for your kidney, what your creatinine levels are?
I know it's well. I'm on dialysis right now. I don't know the blood work.
And how long have you been on dialysis?
About 3 months.
And did the doctors say you'll have to be on dialysis the rest of your life?
So they say, but I don't believe them.
Well, I would love to be able to get a better answer for you, but I would need to look at a really thorough blood test, vitamins, minerals, hormones. You know, there are studies that for kidney failure, people have done stem cell therapy. That may be advantageous to you because you're putting your own cells back into your bloodstream, your circulation, and they help to put brand new cells where you have damage and degeneration. But I don't know enough about you to be able to tell you what you could or couldn't do, because typically those discussions we have once I look at, your blood work. Bring in copies of what you've done before, and then we do my, super thorough blood test, and we'll give you a better idea.
Long Island, right?
Yes, Garden City, Long Island. Garden City, yes. The phone number is 516-794-0404.
796?
516-794. 794-0404. And take a look at the website. You'll see some great information. The website is drcal.net, drcal.net. All righty. Love to help you out. Thank you for your call. Okay. Perfect. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. I guess as you can tell, my approach is that of understanding the human body, learning everything we can about you, maximizing your knowledge of what's going on, explaining things as thoroughly and as easily as I can, and doing everything we can that's natural and safe to try to improve your function or to change the causes of your illness. Phone lines are open, 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Arthur in Queens. Hi there, how are you?
Good evening. How are you, doctor?
Great.
I have glaucoma. I've had it for years. My pressures are very good, but I'm still losing vision.
Okay.
The specialists have no other suggestions or alternatives for...
Do you have any damage to the macula?
No.
So then there's no macular degeneration?
No.
So they don't have a comment as to why you're losing vision, even with good, you know, pressure in your eyes?
Right. I think they call it, I know they call it low tension or normal tension glaucoma.
Right.
The pressures have always
been good. Say that the disc, you know, your optic nerve has been damaged?
Yes.
And did they say how much damage was there?
It's growing. I have it in one eye. I injured my eye when I was young. And now that I'm old, it's coming back to haunt me.
Yeah, it's getting worse.
Right, and it's in one eye. And they said all they can do is just get the pressures down low. And it seems just strange that, you know, that's a
diagnosis. I spoke to a friend the other day who has glaucoma, and he had a stent put in. And I don't know if this is something that's very new, but I hadn't heard much about this before. They put a stent in because his pressure was so high. And now that stent is just like a stent you put in your coronaries. Obviously, it's much smaller, but allows your pressure to stay down a great deal lower. I mean, that might be an advantage. We have people where they've had some improvement in vision, where they were diabetic and had diabetic retinopathy, and we did stem cell therapy for them. But I can't guess or tell you, you know, or guarantee that, you know, with glaucoma, there'd be any appreciable change. I don't know. I haven't really seen that. I'd have to look that up in worldwide literature and see if there was some improvement. But we know that people that have diabetic retinopathy, I know that Parkinson's patients that we've worked with, some of the MS patients, all of them say that they have some vision improvement. So there may be something to that. There's also a video that's going to go up on the website relatively soon of a woman with macular degeneration. That's why I asked, where she couldn't see colors,
right,
and she couldn't see down the center of her eyes, and she wasn't able to sign on, you know, a piece of paper because she couldn't see the line. So she kept having to try to turn her head to be able to try to see. And over the course of a few weeks, and you could hear her story that her color vision is back and she's able to see and write down, you know, sign a check, etc. She's a lovely lady, and her husband came in the other day to do the stem cell therapy for himself. But hopefully within the next few days to a week, we'll have her video up on the website. There are, I think, 17 or 18 videos there now.
What is the website?
www.drcal.net.
C-A-L.net.
These are people who've opted to do the therapy and were so ecstatic with their outcome that wanted to be able to talk about it. So that's why, you know,
you
put them up.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Medicare is the only insurance that we deal with because they're relatively fair in how they, you know, allow, you know, certain codes and billing and reimburse us. But the only insurance that we participate with is Medicare.
Oh, okay.
That's the red, white, and blue Medicare card, yeah.
That was my question.
Okay.
And how about rheumatoid arthritis? Does
there are protocols, and there's research on stem cell helping with rheumatoid arthritis, lupus as well, because they both are significant inflammatory disorders. If you look at the bottom of the website, so you're going to see a whole bunch of videos down the center. These are people who've done the therapy. Then you're going to see articles on heavy metals, some case histories, then 2,000 articles on the bottom. You could scroll through those titles, and you can click on the article and read the abstract, but it talks about a variety of different things, including Parkinson's, MS, diabetes, Alzheimer's, rheumatoid arthritis. There's an article from, I guess, January. Ligament, tendon, cartilage, joint damage, hip arthritis. So there's lots of articles there. Lupus.
I've heard your name, I think, from Dr. Hoffman. And this is my first time calling you, and I'm going to be in touch again.
Thank you.
I really appreciate everything.
Look forward to seeing you, and that would be great. Ron Hoffman's a wonderful doctor.
Yes.
Very good friend for many, many years.
Well, he speaks highly of you, too, I guess.
Terrific guy. Terrific guy. Actually, the best of all the ones I think I've known over all the years. So, he's a terrific guy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Have a good night. Okay, phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so now. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. I've always enjoyed meeting Ron Hoffman, and we've had dinner many times. We've gone to a lot of seminars together, conferences, and always great to chat with him and, you know, pick his brain. We go back and forth about different topics. We used to meet in the Atkins office, Atkins Center, you know, rest Dr. Atkins' soul. We used to meet there every Monday night for the FAME meetings. This is the Foundation for the Advancement of Innovative Medicine, an organization Dr. Atkins created, and all of us would go there and talk about different topics and did a lot of great work. And Dr. Atkins was a terrific, terrific pioneer in keeping nutritional and, quote, alternative medicine alive for so, so long. And, of course, Dr. Hoffman, with his terrific radio programs, really has also carried that from beyond Dr. Atkins. So two terrific pioneers here in New York, as I think, of course, much more so than any other doctors without the country. So I think we owe a great deal of gratitude to Dr. Atkins, of course, and also Dr. Hoffman for all the work that they've done. Okay, phone lines are open. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so now. And let's go next to Teresa. Hi there, Teresa. How are you?
Hi, doctor. I just had a question about how stem cell therapy could affect the ravages of MS.
Well, the research, and we have research on the site. We have a couple of patients with MS that we've worked with. Typically, the way that stem cells work is that they pick up signals from damage or degeneration in various tissues. They're attracted to that, just like your immune cells are attracted to an infection. And the stem cells go to the area, and in an easier way to say it, they set up shop, and they become the damaged cells. They become new versions of the damaged cells. So that's how they can repair the sheath of the brain, and that's why MS patients can get results. Same thing with Alzheimer's patients. They make new cells that make dopamine. Same thing with diabetic patients. They can make the new cells that make insulin, pancreatic cells. So if you go on Google or scholar.google and you look at a great deal of this research, it would be difficult because you'd have to look up bone marrow stem cells and, you know, this or that disease or heart or lung or liver, kidney or pancreas or autologous bone marrow stem cell therapy for this or that. Now, I can save you, you know, a good amount of time because I've got thousands of articles and references, citations from studies on my website that talk about that. So you can see and read each of the topics. The second one from the top is stem cell therapy for lupus and scleroderma. So if you click on that title, you'll see the abstract, and then you'll see where that exists on the internet, who did it, you know, where it was published. So it shows you a lot of great information because I've done that, and I continue to do that, and, you know, every now and then we'll get the time to just send out a whole bunch of articles to my web developer. We're actually redoing the website, so I'm taking a little bit more time to get that part done. So we haven't put tons of articles on recently. We're just trying to make the web a little bit more, you know, user-friendly and easy to understand and see. But, yeah, there are thousands upon thousands of studies that talk about how stem cells from your body help your own tissues.
Okay, and then do you also take, like, regular insurance? I know you said you
the only one we take is Medicare because they're the only one that plays fair. So if we bill Medicare, typically within, you know, 3 weeks to a month, Medicare will reimburse. But the other insurance companies don't. We've tried this over the years. I have a big computer system, a big network system, and every insurance company says, oh, yeah, just bill us. Don't worry. You'll get paid in 2 weeks. And some never paid. So the problem is they don't want to pay the doctor. However, when patients pay for their visit and then we send that in electronically from the billing company that we use, you'll get reimbursed fast because they send out electronically to your insurance to tell them to pay you.
Gotcha.
So,
okay, so
kind of the way it works.
You would pay and then that, like, we would pay, and then we would get reimbursed.
Yeah, typically that, the way that works is when you're paying for the visit or the service, we send it electronically to your insurance saying that you paid, so they want to reimburse you quickly because you're paying the premium. They don't want to lose you as a person. But we've had, you know, insurance companies that never paid, or they take a year to pay. It's just, it's impossible to chase them down.
Yeah.
And it's to their advantage when they don't pay.
Yeah.
So if they've got hundreds of millions of dollars that are coming in, you know, requests for payment, and they stall for a few months, they're making a lot of money just holding on to the money.
They're making a lot, they're making a lot.
It's unfortunate, but true.
It is. It's sad. So, okay, so you're located in New York?
Yeah, Garden City is the main office.
Okay.
Yeah, right near where Meadowbrook and Stewart Avenue intersect, and it's a smaller office I have in Plainview. But Garden City is the big office.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Website's drcal.net, drcal.net. Okay, let's go to Arthur in the Queens. How are you?
How you doing, Doctor? Yes,
yes
it's
sir.
Me again.
Yep.
After I hung up, my wife came up with some questions. One, are there side effects to using stem cells?
We haven't seen any side effects using your stem cells. They're in your body right now. What we're doing is numbing the skin, laying a little anesthetic on the bone. Through a little pinhole, we take out some bone marrow, spin that, and put your own cells right back in your body.
That sounds great.
Are there possible side effects with someone else's stem cells from amniotic fluid or umbilical cord? Yes. That's foreign. So there's always potential side effects with foreign tissue.
Okay. You mentioned bone marrow. Is that supposed to be painful, or is this painful?
Well, bone marrow, everybody hears and freaks out about because the traditional approach to doing a bone marrow extraction, you know, oncologists do that. I don't believe that they take the time to numb the area of extraction. They may numb the skin, but I don't believe at all that they're numbing or laying the anesthetic on the bone. So because I was trained to both numb the skin and lay the anesthetic on the bone, you know, a good amount of anesthetic, it's about, you know, 6 or 7 cc's, 8 cc's we use to do both.
Right.
And I tap on the bone with the same needle that I use to just lay the anesthetic on. It's almost like putting stain on some wood. I ask people, do you feel anything? They typically say no. So then when we extract the fluid, we extract it very slowly, and, you know, it's not a difficult process. No one's really complained about it. But we make sure that we use enough of that anesthetic to numb the bone.
Okay, what part of the body is that taken from?
I'm going to have to draw you a little picture.
Okay.
So you know where your belt sits? On the middle of your hip bone?
Okay.
That hip bone, if you're looking at a skeleton, is like the letter C facing downward on both sides.
Okay.
So if you were to have your hand, your thumbs on the front part of that bone, and you run them back in a C-shaped pattern pointing down, the back part of that crest of the ilium is a fat little bump like the size of your finger, your thumb. And that's the area we get them from.
Okay. Well, now, would a hip replacement interfere with that?
No, not at all, because the hip socket is about 6 inches, 8 inches down and to the right or to the left. It's nowhere near the joint.
And does this require any overnight stay in a hospital?
No, never. No, no. It takes about 45 seconds to numb and then extract, and then you sit and wait while we spin it, and then we put it back in. So there's no general anesthesia, there's no overnight, no. No.
And this is in your office?
Correct. In my office.
Okay. I think we got it covered.
Okay, great. Look at the website. You'll see some great results, people's videos of how they responded to the things we do. So it's drcal.net. And thank you for the call. Okay, phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in, do so now. Let's go to Joe in Muncie, New York. How are you?
Good. Hi. How are you, Doctor? Thanks.
Great.
I want to ask you, what do you say about Lyme disease for children? My little daughter, she is 3.5. She had some symptoms, and we took blood tests, and everything positive on Lyme disease.
So she is positive for Lyme disease?
Right. And she took medication for 3 weeks, about.
Yeah.
And then she stopped. All the symptoms went away. And after, like, 1 to 2 months, it started coming back.
And did they retest her to see if it was still positive?
Yeah. They retest, but we're still waiting for the results. But to start right away.
For adults, we'll do intravenous vitamin therapy. You can't do that. I can't do that on a 3-year-old.
What would you do for a 3-year-old?
Well, I don't treat 3-year-olds. I'm not a pediatrician. You know, You know, people have to be teenagers for us to be able to see them. I'm not a pediatrician. I'm board certified in family medicine, family practice, but we don't treat three-year-olds. I think that either if you called one of the local children's hospitals, like Schneider Children's Hospitals, they'll have some good specialists there for infectious disease. She just might need to be on the antibiotic longer. She might need to take some acidophilus to help her gut so the antibiotic doesn't affect her gut. So, yeah, we don't treat kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just maybe you'll be able to answer me that. Her regular doctor said just think of antibiotic and that's it. Don't treat anything.
I think in adults, when we treat Lyme disease, we do a variety of things. We use antibiotic. We do vitamins orally, intravenous vitamins, acidophilus. So, you know, there are more things we can do for an adult, of course, than we can do for a child.
I see. Okay.
All righty. Sorry, I couldn't give you a better answer, but thank you for your call.
Sure. Thanks.
All righty. So let's go to Lisa in Edison. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. I had a question. I'm a diabetic, and I wanted to try the stem cell therapy for the diabetes. But I'm also, I have metastatic breast cancer.
How long ago?
2016.
Typically for me to be able to do stem cells, people that have cancer need to be 5 years free of cancer. That's okay. What we were taught with, you know, clinical trial, you know, years ago when we started. So there are doctors who do stem cell therapy for cancer, and it may be to your advantage to see if you can find a doctor at a, you know, a big hospital that will do the stem cell therapy, you know, for the cancer, but that would also help with the diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, stem cell therapy has been used for many years for cancer, and it's approved for cancer, and insurance pays for it for cancer, but that's also when they're using expensive chemo and other things and radiation. So it's odd to me that they wouldn't want stem cell therapy to be covered for diabetes without, you know, the cancer. So if you have cancer, stem cells paid for by your insurance. But to take the diabetic patient and to help them and potentially make them non-diabetic in, you know, 2 to 4 months, as we've seen on my website, the insurance companies are stalling or balking on paying for it. I think they have to understand they're going to save $1 million in the person who's diabetic, because if you can make a person non-diabetic between the stem cell and, you know, low-carb exercise and all the things we talk about, they'd be saving a huge amount of money in that individual going forward. So there's stuff that just doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right. I'll look for a doctor that would do that.
Yeah. Those typically are oncologists in the hospital that have an office in the hospital because they're always there. So, all righty. Thank you for your call. Phone number is 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Try not to wait to the end of the program to call in. We'd love to chat with you. Let's go to Paul in New York. How are you?
Hey, Doc. What's happening?
Yes, sir. Good, good. How are you doing?
Tremendous. Tremendous. So, prostate cancer, I'm Gleason 6.
Okay.
You have any particular protocols for that?
Well, when were you diagnosed?
Yeah, about a month and a half ago.
And how old are you now?
57.
Okay. And what did they initially tell you? Was there any spread or no?
No, there's no spread.
Certainly. And they did a PET scan to see if there's any cells outside the prostate that may be taking up the PET scan injectable to see if there's any other areas?
I don't know what name of the scan.
A PET scan is doing an injection with the dye and then taking a picture to see if the dye gets sucked up to other cells to see if it's anywhere else.
No, they didn't do that dye. It's regular biopsy and the machine where you go inside and another machine lay down inside for like about half an hour.
Okay.
Or that scan is called. They didn't do that dye.
Well, yeah, if they gave you a dye and you went into a machine, that could be the PET scan.
Oh. Yeah. That's
yeah. Probably all right. So they don't think it's escaped. So that's phenomenal. You're very lucky. Do they say they want to do surgery or robotic, or what do they want to do?
Well, I went to see a guy that's also on radio. You probably heard about him.
Yeah.
says he was radiation, we have 80% success rate.
Yeah, you know what? The thing that I have an issue with is when doctors say 80 with this percent success. I mean, there are so many variables with every patient. I never give a percent. You can't, because some people might get a higher level of result and some people get lower. You know, I don't think a doctor can really say, as a lot of doctors do, oh, these are the chances. I mean, you don't know, especially when you talk about radiation, you know, and killing tissue.
Incidentally, I know someone that went to him that eventually died, but I don't know what stage.
Well, remember, you know, cancer is a horrible thing. And I've seen cancer patients before, and it really is one of the worst things that you could come up against, because it's such an aggressive, progressive issue. Sometimes there's really nothing you can do, you know, and we like to have the family come in. Sometimes the family doesn't want to come in. Sometimes the patient will come in and they want anything that we could do, but it still may not be enough. It's weird, but, you know, people don't come in typically to see me when they've just had the diagnosis. They come in when they're stage four, and there's nothing the other doctors can do, and they say, well, what can you do? And I have a hard time telling them that it may be, you know, too late, but, you know, I don't know.
Well, Gleason 6 is early stage, isn't it?
Well, it's sort of variable. I think no matter what the stage is or what they're saying, if it didn't spread from the prostate, then you have a far better chance than if it did. You know, some doctors may want to put you on hormone blockers if they think the hormones are correlated with it. Sometimes they'll find that on biopsy. Some doctors want to remove it. So it depends on a lot more information. Of course, if you want to get your blood work done and we check and correct your vitamins and minerals and do that, that would make sense. There are some doctors who specialize in different therapies of cancer. I talk about Dr. Forsyth in Reno, Nevada all the time. He's a brilliant doctor. And he does intravenous vitamins as well as intravenous medications after using a little bit of insulin to lower your blood sugar so cancer cells will suck up the medication. There's also a Dr. Salazzo that I know. He's all the way out in Smithtown that does that therapy. So it really depends upon what your body's presenting with. But it's hard for me to give you a clear answer without looking at what I would call the real comprehensive blood work.
Sure, no. But you don't have a particular protocol that you would use.
There's not one protocol you would use for every person. It has to be specific to that person. So there's no doctor in the world who says, everybody with this thing, I use these protocols. It really shouldn't be that way. It should be the protocols created by your blood results. So that's what I would do. I'd love to have you come in and do the testing on you and then take a look at your prior tests so we can see what's what and then make the recommendations based on that. It's the only real way to do it.
Right. So you subscribe to the theory that testosterone levels help to drive...
Not necessarily. Because, you know, you can't just say that testosterone causes prostate cancer, because look at all the kids, teen and 20 and 30 and 40-year-old men that have lots of testosterone on board. Just like women with estrogen, they have tons of estrogen when they're young women. I think there are many things that contribute to cancer that people don't realize, whether it's food or chemicals or smoking or alcohol. So that's why it's a multivariate variable process. There are some people that, yes, they may have receptors on their cells that may make the cancer grow faster at that point. So it's possible.
So one of my initial symptoms was, I started years ago early, I noticed changes in my urinary pattern. Is that
swelling of the prostate. That doesn't necessarily mean cancer. So swelling of the prostate happens to lots of people without having cancer. But get copies of everything you have and bring it in so we can have a real good, intelligent discussion about it. I think that would make the most sense. And take a look at my website as well, drcal.net. I'd love to help you out. Thank you for your call. Let's go next to Margaret in Jersey City. How are you?
Hi, doctor. Good evening.
How are you?
I'm calling strictly for your opinion, if that's okay.
For what?
For your opinion.
Of course, yeah.
Okay. 6 years ago today, I had what was supposed to be a routine appendectomy, which was anything but.
So did it burst, or was it?
It did. It ruptured when I was having it done. So,
like,
I was home about maybe 5-6 days supposed to be recuperating, and I was getting sicker. Next thing I know, I go back to ER. I had abscesses throughout my body, and my right lung was collapsing. I had no idea what was going on, because it was...
That was after you had the surgery for a burst appendix, a ruptured appendix.
Yes, it was after, yep. So I should have gone. It was probably my fault that I didn't go sooner, but I didn't know because it was my first surgery.
Yeah.
So I was pretty in bad. I was in bad shape. I was in the hospital for a month after that. A month.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm still in pain today. My back is all ripped up with scars. And every doctor said to me, well, it's a good thing you weren't a smoker because I didn't smoke. You know, that they were just very nonchalant. Well, these things happen, and if you smoke,
well,
you probably won't know.
I can tell you statistically that people who have an appendix that is getting worse typically have more and more symptoms. They either call their GP and say, hey, I've got this pain. He says, come in, let's take a look. He'll touch you, put a sonogram on you, see what's happening, and try to get it dealt with before it bursts. Now, there are people who don't have that much pain, and they kind of like deal with it, and then it can rupture before you get to the hospital, which is even more dangerous. Mm-hmm. But I've seen this happen where doctors are scrambling to try to clean up all the mess that is in your abdominal cavity when the appendix with its infection, raging infection, bursts. And it can seed other areas of infection, so it's a hard surgery. You know, no doubt about it. It's a nightmare that doctors don't want to... It's a nightmare doctors don't want to... You know, have to come down and try to fix because they would much rather fix it before it happens. So I've seen it. I know what it's like to have.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. In my training years ago, of course.
All right. I just wanted to know.
I think you want to try to make your immune system strong, get your body, your vitamin levels in great range. That can help to make a better immune response. You want to eat right, exercise, do everything you can to make your body healthy.
I'm so all right now, but I was pretty bad back then.
Yeah, so. I know. I get it.
Thanks.
I understand.
Thanks for your.
Sure.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for the call.
All right. Bye, Doctor.
Okay, let's go next to Dolores in Queens. How are you?
Hi.
How are you today?
Well, I think I feel a little better than usual.
Okay.
But I was in the, had some tests done at a local hospital.
Yeah.
Because I had a hemorrhage in my right eye. They said it had something to do with high sugar, but the sugar was not high at all.
Are you diabetic?
I guess I that's what they say, but I don't know if 140 is diabetic or not.
Yeah, your fasting blood sugar, if it's above 126, you're diabetic.
Oh, well, that's pretty
good. And if your hemoglobin A1C, which is a three-month average of sugar getting into your cells, you know, is above 6, is 6.3, 6.5,
well,
yeah, then you're there.
Here's the reason I called. The creatinine is 0.83.
Yeah.
And they're telling me that that's a high. And now, would that...
It's not really high based upon all the blood tests I've ever seen. You know, it's got to be under 1. I mean, it should be under 0.9. You're under 0.9. But
yeah,
if you're
I'm
becoming diabetic or your kidney is being affected by the diabetes, then, yeah, you got to change that.
Well, here's what they did tell me. They said your kidneys are failing. I said, what are you talking about? I never heard that. And they, at that point, it was 1.11. And then it went back down to 0.83, and they said that was okay.
Right.
But the part that bothered me was the BUN, I don't know what that is, nitrogen.
Blood urea nitrogen, yeah.
Well, that went from 18 to 25.
Yeah, that's not a big issue either. It usually means you're a little dehydrated. What's the GFR, glomerular filtration rate?
60.
You're supposed to be 60 or above, so you're kind of knocking on the door of having a little bit of danger there. So I think you really need to, number one, learn about the mechanism of diabetes and how it affects your organs.
Okay.
What I would do is I would see you, examine you, get the really good blood test done. I cut the carbs down in your diet, number one,
because
that'll bring your sugar down.
I eat a lot of cake and candy.
Then you're killing yourself. Then number two, you'd have to walk every day for a half hour to get your muscles to start burning the sugars and fats.
I walk for hours every day.
Okay. Then number three, we've got to look at your hormone levels, thyroid, testosterone, DHEA, et cetera, to enhance your ability to burn sugars and fats. And we've got to correct your vitamin levels. So those are things you got to start because you want to change the progression of this. Otherwise, that's just going to go bad. This is sort of a warning sign. You know, your sugar's high, you're diabetic, and your kidney function is wavering, so you've got to get on the ball here. You've got to do those things. We could also talk about stem cell therapy as a benefit for your pancreas so that your pancreas can help to make some more insulin. But, yeah, you got to get rid of the carbs. Take a look at the website, and you can give us a call at the office or at the end of the program. Thank you so much for your call. The website's drcal.net, drcal.net. And the phone number to Garden City is 516-794-0404. And Plainview is 516-433-3232. Give us a call. We'd love to help you out. Have a wonderful day.